Now, the band Three Dog Night formed in Los Angeles back in 1967 and had incredible success because they had 21 Billboard Top 40 hits between 69 and 75, three of them number ones. But did you know that the founder and lead singer, Danny Hutton, is actually a Donegal man, born here in Donegal, in Buncrana? And he is going to be honoured this year with the Tip O'Neill Irish Diaspora Award. That will be in the Inishowen Gateway Hotel on the 17th. And with the help of Donegal County Council, the band are actually coming over to perform. They're going to be playing in Buncrana on the 16th and also doing gigs in Dublin and Belfast. They're playing in Whelan's in Dublin on the 15th and in the Limelight in Belfast on Sunday the 19th. And Danny Hutton has had an amazing career in music and has had a 6 decades career in the music business. 6 decades and counting, by the way. But has worked with everyone from Brian Wilson of the Beach Boys to Elton John and Billy Bob Thornton. And I'm delighted that Danny joins me on the line now from his home in Los Angeles. Danny, it's morning there, it's afternoon here, but how are you doing?
I'm doing well. This morning I got up, I awakened and went down and had made some tea.
Good. That's a good.
I'm drinking some tea.
That's a good start. That's a good start to any day, no matter what country you're in.
I just want to excuse all the Irish people out there for my accent. You know, my mother and I left in 1947 for we left Buncrana, and so I've had an Irish accent. And then we were in Boston, where Tip O'Neill's from, until I was 12. So I had a Boston accent. And then we moved to California, to Los Angeles in 1954. So now I have this Yank California accent, which over here they say you have no accent at all if you're from California.
So. Well. It sounds mighty fine to me on this side of the Atlantic anyhow. Okay, let's go back to the early days. Yeah. You started working at Disney, but behind the scenes, and then with the Hanna-Barbera record label. That's the name we normally associate with cartoons.
Yes. Was that show known in
yeah.
Ireland,
yeah.
The Flintstones?
Absolutely, yeah.
Yeah, I actually started there. I worked at Disney Studios. I used to load and unload records. Buena Vista Records, they had a record company then. And then I auditioned at Hanna-Barbera, and they started a rock and roll record company, HBR. And I went in with my guitar, which I'd bought actually in Belfast years before. And they gave me a little sheet of paper and said, go in the other room and write a song to these lyrics. And the lyrics were to Hippity Hoppity Kangaroo. So I went in and I came back in a half hour and they said, okay, we'll hire you. And that's what I did. I used to write and do records and produce them. I would do the instruments and I would do all of the three-part harmony vocal parts. They would release the records under different names, like the Bats and all these crazy names. Like in Washington State, they'd have one of those TV shows, and they'd have a group get on, and who would be the Bats, and they would lip sync to my records. And one day I did this song, and they said, "Well, we're going to release this, and you're going to be the artist on it." And I said, well, I don't sing in public. I'm just a record guy. And they said, no, you know, you're going to go out and sing. So then the Flintstones, they put me on the Flintstones. They drew me, my likeness. And I was on a Flintstone Bedrock television. I was a cartoon on the Flintstones. So I was in Bedrock. Then they sent me out on a tour with Sonny and Cher, who had a song called I Got You, Babe, which was number one in the country. And I had never really sung in public. So the first time I ever sang in public was me and my guitar and 5,000 people in the audience. So before I went out, I thought, well, I'm either going to faint or I'm going to get through it. So that was my start in show business.
You must have done okay that night, because that was the start rather than the end of your career. And it went on. You founded the band, and the official debut was in the famous Whiskey A Go Go in '68. And I think your first album was with the band was a big success.
Yeah. Yeah, it was. Well, I got two other singers together.
Yeah.
And then we were signed at the record label, and everything was good. I was a really good friend of, I've become good friends with Brian Wilson and the Beach Boys. So I brought them over to his house. He moved his house, and Edgar Rice Burroughs, who wrote Tarzan, it had been his house. So it was painted purple, and went over there, and we auditioned for Brian, and then he decided that the Beach Boys were in Japan, mm-hmm. and he wanted us to start another label, and we were going to be the first act on his label, and he called us Redwood. He wrote a song for me called Darlin', because I used to say Darlin' all the time, and we went and recorded two songs with Brian Wilson, and then the Beach Boys came back. And they heard one of the songs, and they said, "That's a hit song. What are you doing?" You know, they got Brian in the corner and said, "What are you doing? Giving them that song? We need that song." So I would have done exactly what they did. So I have no bad feelings about the Beach Boys at all. I like the guys.
Okay.
So because of them, we ended up forming a band. And then we've ended up calling it Three Dog Night, and everything took off within about 6 months.
But you remained good friends with Brian Wilson. In fact, you went on to become best man at his wedding.
Yeah, well, I was one. I knew Marilyn, his first wife, really, really well. She really was a good cook. And then later, he married Melinda. I would say I was his best friend. He used to come over to my house, and we just hit it off. He was a wonderful, wonderful, sweet person, a nice guy. You know, I spoke at his funeral, and I saw him about 3 weeks before he passed. He was still okay. Everybody said, "Oh, he's senile and he couldn't." He didn't know where he was, and he was okay. He was fine. And he passed in his sleep. But when I walked into the room at his house, he'd never done this before with his song. And he said to me, "Danny, sing this song called Going in Circles, that we had recorded." It wasn't a single or anything like that. I thought it was a fine song. And I did. And that song kind of, if you listen to the lyrics, it really shows what he was thinking at the time.
And you sang it for him?
I sang my verse, yes.
Yeah, okay.
But I said, "Where's the piano? I need you to," and he said, I'm not playing piano now. That was a red alert for me, because Brian Wilson, he would come to my house, he'd pass out on the couch and all that stuff, but he always would usually communicate by sitting in the piano and kind of just playing, you know, tinkling on the piano, and that's how he would talk. He was almost attached to the piano, and I was concerned when he said no, he wasn't playing anymore. Yeah, well, I used to go to England from the early 70s for about 5 years. I was a bachelor, and I would spend about 2 weeks around Christmas. I had a place in Park Lane. I had a flat there. And I phoned Dick James Music, a publisher, looking for songs. So they sent over Reggie Dwight to my place.
Uh-huh.
And he was just a sweetheart. Really, really nice guy. And he played me some demos on a little phonograph we had. Then he took me over to Dick James Music, and Bernie was there. And he played me his first album. I think it was called Empty Skies. It was good, but it obviously later on he blossomed within a year or two, and then he just really took over. But we did do two songs of his, and then he phoned me we became good friends. We got him into a club in London when we were there promoting our first single. Then he sent me this wonderful letter later, two-page letter, and he phoned me just thanking him for feeding him and helping to pay his rent.
Back in the day, I'm chatting about the 60s, the so-called swinging 60s, you had quite a party house in Laurel Canyon, and a lot of famous names, a lot of musicians and actors would have been calling by.
Yeah. Well, I've lived in Laurel Canyon, you know, where all the hippies used to come to either get loaded or die. And I have a house here. I'm still in Laurel Canyon. I came into Laurel Canyon about 1963. So my house, the Whiskey Go-Go, was a very popular club. My house was probably 10 minutes from the Whiskey. So it would close at 2 in the morning, and then a lot of people to go home would have to drive up Laurel Canyon. They'd have to drive past my house. So after 2 in the morning, I would get all of these different bands and people that would come by that had been partying all night. And it did become a very popular thing. I had numerous people come in and crash on the couch. I don't know if a lot of the listeners might not know, but J. Paul Getty was kind of an international. J. Paul Getty Jr. He was kidnapped in Italy, and he was ransomed. They put a ransom on him, and they actually cut one of his ears off, or a big part of his ear, and sent it to prove that they had him. Anyway, he came around to the house, and he didn't have any money at the time. I don't know if it was the checks or the family was mad at him. So he stayed at my house for a week on the couch. And the couch is famous for a lot of people. Right. My mother would I had rolled barbed wire around my house. It wasn't a huge house or anything like that, but and a locked, you know, gate with a camera in the front. Mm. My mother was born in Buncrana. She found a way to get past the barbed wire. She would climb over the fence and come in, and she'd come in with a broom, and then once in a while she would whack. That probably wasn't famous in Europe, but there was a show called The Partridge Family. So David Cassidy, who had a couple of hits, he came in and she was whacking him with a broom. What do you let all these bums pass out? So a lot of people. I had to knock on the door, and the door opened, and it was John Lennon and Ringo and Harry Nilsson. And they had come from the Troubadour, and I guess they had gotten kicked out of the Troubadour because Lennon was, I guess, a bit crazy, and he'd left Yoko, so he was with my Peng, his girlfriend. So he just sat there and had tea. And he was very, very nice, very gentle, and. Anyway, I was fairly thrilled because I'd always been a big Beatles fan.
And luckily enough, your mum didn't arrive that night.
Yeah, yeah, that would have been that wouldn't have been good. Well, for Getty, she knew J. Paul Getty because it was a big deal in the United States. The right. Kid, and she went up the street, which just up, and it was about a 5-minute walk. She went up the street and got him a pack of Player cigarettes. So she liked him. So
hard to believe that one of the Gettys stayed for what was it a week on your couch and said he had no money. Probably one of the richest families in the States.
Yeah, well, I think he we didn't talk too much about the family, but I think he butted heads with the family. Okay. He's a fairly wild guy. So yeah, I saw him actually at a concert, and he was in a wheelchair. So So I don't know if he had a stroke or something, but he was very, very nice, guy at the time. But yeah, I have many memories of that house. I rented the house, so I finally bought a house. And the house was like, wasn't that some fancy, house, but it was like a nice, real nice cabin. And I bought it, and it was Alice Cooper's house. Since then, I've put in a studio and stuff, but and I've lived there since 1976, yeah, about that. And Mickey Dolenz lived next door in his house.
Monkees?
Yeah, from the Monkees, yeah. So a lot of people lived in that area. Joni Mitchell was down the street. Wondrous time. Oh, anyway, so I lived on Ridpath, and this little house, the girlfriend I had was a dancer on a local show, and her girlfriend was a girl named Mimi. And Mimi's girlfriend was dating this writer guy named Jack Nicholson. So Jack ended up being Jack Nicholson. So Jack used to come down to the house. I became good friends with Jack before he really popped. He used to come home from, you know, I don't know if you know the actor Harry Dean Stanton.
Yeah.
But he would come over with Harry, and Harry would just bring his guitar and sit there and play until 3 or 4 in the morning and then pass out.
Yeah. Well, let's maybe go back to the music, because we're a bit tight on time, and these, I mean, we could talk for hours because of all the, you know, the people that you've come across, not just in music, but, you know, back at the house, so to speak. But the band who enjoyed a huge success in the 60s and into the 70s, you've got your first album out. Now, there's been a lot of changes over the years, a lot of former band members that you've lost or that have been replaced. But this is the first album of new material in 42 years. It sounds very contemporary.
We used to always get nailed by the critics because they said we covered other people's records. Mm-hmm. And we never, ever covered anybody's records. All the songs we found were not hits. They were either on an album that didn't happen, or it was a demo somebody sent us. And then I think we were really good at arranging and performing them. So that always bothered me. But we had 21 hits. We ended up doing, after the Beatles, we were the first band, and I always mentioned it, I think a lot of people credit Crosby, Stills, and Nash, and I knew all those guys, but we were the first band to do stadiums after the Beatles. We did the Cotton Bowl in Texas, which is a big football stadium. Rod Stewart and the Faces opened for us, and we did the first guys to bring in the big screens and the big sound systems. The Beatles, they played always. The Beatles were so great, but they played with little amps, basically, and the whatever speaker system was in the stadium. We had consecutive hits in a row. We were a big deal back then. And it saddens me. And when I got the award to go to Buncrana, the Tip O'Neill Award, I thought, well, I'll come back. And I think we've only had one hit. I think Mama told me not to come. In Ireland.
Over here.
And I don't know if it's... Well, part of it, I think, was our managers at the time, we were so big in the States that they didn't want to invest in us going to Europe to try to get an audience. Or maybe our music just didn't fit in Europe. But I felt when I got the award, I thought, you know what, I want to go to Ireland and I want to perform there, even though we didn't have a lot of hits and we're probably unknown. But I just had to do it.
And just to remind listeners that it's not just Buncrana, it's also Dublin and Whelan's. That's on the 15th, and then in Belfast and the Limelight on the 19th. But the date here in Donegal, in the cinema, Buncrana Cinema, actually, on Thursday the 16th. And you're going to...
Yeah, that's going to be fun. But what I always think, I'm going to have to preface When we do Mama Told Me, say, no, this is not the Tom Jones hit. Because he covered us.
That's
he
right.
covered us.
Yeah.
And I love him. He's such a great singer. But if you hear his version, it's exactly our version. Exactly. We completely changed when we got the demo from Randy Newman. It was a completely different song. In fact, Randy said we made his song a hit. But then Tom did it with a Welsh group, a really good group.
Stereophonics.
But he did it. Yeah, he did exactly like ours. So I hope a lot of people don't think, oh, they covered Tom Jones.
No.
We didn't. He covered us. We do every style of music. You know, a lot of bands, you'll come and see them and they have a certain style and they play it, you know, which is great. They play it all night long. Mm-hmm. Or the Grateful Dead, they'll play a certain thing. We are eclectic. We do we can do blues. We do country. We do reggae. We do everything. And a lot of them were hits and they're all styles of music. So anybody coming to see us, and we're firing on all cylinders. Some of the guys have been in the group since the early 80s, so it is Three Dog Night when you see us, except I have my two sons in the group now, bass and drums, and they, you know, everybody talks about nepotism, why do you have, but these guys are really, really, really good. My one son, Tom, we've got a studio here, we did our album here. And we had Jimmy Cliff, who did Too Many Rivers to Cross and all that. He did his album here, and he got Reggae Album of the Year, and he won a Grammy. And my son Dash, he was with a girl group called the Three Sisters and a Mister, and then they changed their name to Haim. So he was the drummer in Haim. Mm-hmm. When they did Glastonbury and all that stuff.
Yeah.
So they're real deal musicians. So I'm really proud of the band. Anybody coming to see us, I think you're going to be surprised. I think in a good way.
Okay. Well, we look forward to it. That date in Donegal, Thursday, the 16th of October. Danny Hutton, we could talk for a lot longer, but time has beaten us.
Oh.
And it has been an absolute pleasure, and we look forward to seeing you here back in your hometown on the 16th, and congratulations on being awarded the Tip O'Neill Irish Diaspora Award. Danny Hutton, thank you.
Thank you, John.